You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast.
Josh is here tonight because John Cohan is on vacation.
Tough life.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I hope he's listening right now. Tonight, we're talking about big marijuana. The reason we're doing this show tonight is because there's an important gathering of addiction specialists tomorrow at the JFK Library, including Dr. Nora Volko, who's of NIDA, National Institute of Drug Addiction.
Mm-hmm. Or drug abuse.
Abuse, right, yes. And Patrick Kennedy. And it's going to be about marijuana, addiction, mental health, and policy. And one of the things we like to do on this show is try to get education out about changes in policy and get people to kind of think about the repercussions of choices they make. Politically, this is a really important event because it's a lot of people coming to talk about the big picture about addiction. Our first guest, Heidi Heilman, she's a founding member of Massachusetts Prevention Alliance, which is a statewide educational and advocacy organization and one of the sponsors of tomorrow night's event. And she also launched Wayland Cares, a community coalition dedicated to reducing local youth substance abuse. She's now the CEO of Adventi, a company that creates educational products for schools and communities that focus on preventing. And I think preventing is the important thing. She talks a lot about prevention, preventing drug and alcohol use.
Sure, especially with the teen culture. It seems pretty pertinent.
You were once one of them.
We'll also have a guest, Brian Cadigan, and Brian is the COO of Adventi. He works with Heidi, and he's a marketing and advertising exec specializing in youth market research.
Well, it's really interesting because tonight we're going to talk about big marijuana and how it affects the choices that are made and the elections and the voting people have had and the location of dispensaries and who's doing what. And I really wanted to first hear, what do you guys mean when you talk about big marijuana?
Great. So thank you. And we have, through the years of research, and I've spent the last 4 or 5 years really looking at marijuana and what this big movement is to legalize across the country. And in looking at the history of some of our other addiction industries, including tobacco, it became very evident that marijuana was following tobacco's playbook very carefully and in detail. So, for example, in the early 20s, 30s, 40s, tobacco paid doctors to push their products, and much of the advertising was about how cigarettes and cigarette smoking helped with weight loss and with depression and actually in helping people address anxiety. So that was that. Those were the campaigns that were running back then, and it was
right. They would have pictures of doctors and
yes.
Selling cigarettes.
27,000 doctors agree or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And we were very through all of the tobacco history that we have. We are lucky now to have what came out of the tobacco settlement, which is documents and images and advertising campaigns and internal material from the tobacco industries themselves that really tell the story.
And tell the truth about what they were doing.
Yeah, right, and how they were trying to manipulate the public to sell a product that was highly addictive and would build lifetime consumers through an addictive and very deadly product.
So I'm sorry.
You were
ahead.
Even talking about targeting kids with candy cigarettes was a conscious thing.
Yes.
Instead of just, I thought it was cute when I was 4.
Yes. Well, Go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, I remember these bubblegum cigarettes, and you could blow through them, and a little puff of sugar would come out, and it looked like an actual cigarette. And when I was a kid, that was, so cool.
Yes, and they still actually sell those cigarettes.
Oh, I'm sure
they do. And on the package, it says, be just like daddy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So it's and it's market research. Teens have a developing brain, and we know through the brain science that, not until age 23 to 25 does your brain fully develop. And they've done enough research to learn and know now that the developing brain is primed for addiction. So they're much more teens are much more susceptible to addiction, no matter what the product. And with marijuana and tobacco, that becomes part of their market research material. And those are the target market, because if we can hook them young, we build a consumer base that will last a lifetime.
Mm. Well, you're going to hear a lot of cynical, I mean, if people call in, but I'm sure you've heard a lot of cynicism about, but tobacco is, you know, marijuana is different than that. You know, it started by all those groups of people who want to start their little dispensaries, or they think that marijuana is not dangerous and shouldn't be. But you talk about big marijuana as well.
Right. So the mom and pop shops are there, and we call them mom and pop shops, where they're, you know, local folks trying to make a living off marijuana, and there is that element to it. But there has been a movement of people behind legalization since the 60s and 70s, and a lot of money has gone into that movement, and a great deal of strategy has gone into that movement.
Like what?
Like back in the 70s, there were discussions that took place about wrapping a campaign around medical marijuana, and that term medical marijuana came out of those discussions, and it was a brilliant campaign, and it was a campaign that tobacco actually used as well. You know, align it with medicine, have doctors selling cigarettes, and people will think it's harmless, when indeed there are very big risks with marijuana and a lot of harm that comes with marijuana use, especially with 21st century pot. You know, when we talk about marijuana, it's not the same marijuana that we were using, you know, back in the day. It's much more potent. It's very different looking. It's infused in foods. It's in high potency concentrates, dabs, wax. I mean, these are things that people have no understanding or awareness of yet. Teens sort of do, because they see it more now. But the adult population is still thinking of marijuana as that, you know, one joint that, you know, sometimes you it would get you high and sometimes it wouldn't, depending on what was in it. But now it's
a guarantee now.
There was a word for that kind of marijuana back then. Was I can't remember. There's some.
I might have read somewhere that it was like creeper.
Yeah.
but it's interesting, because it seems that buzzword of medical marijuana really caught fire. Maybe sometime in the last like 10 or 15 years, just speaking as a layman. That's what you hear about now when you hear about marijuana in the news, you know,
yes.
About like what it treats rather than what the potential risks are.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And it's, you know, there's a lot to this, and it's a lot about big money. So one of the things that I'm realizing, and because I, you know, during my years of research, if you Google marijuana, it's very interesting what comes up in those searches. And there's not much in there that talks about the harms at all, for pages and pages on a Google search.
That's true.
And a lot of it is, you know, how the movement's coming, about what's happening with, you know, a person being treated with marijuana. So I started to think about that and look at that and do some reading about tobacco. And internally in the tobacco documents, they talk about how they needed to own the media in order to turn the public opinion around about how harmful tobacco was. They needed to own the media and saturate the media that with their own research and their own talking points that clouded the harms that we knew about. And the lung cancer connection with tobacco was made back in the 20s.
Wow.
So all that time, the public was getting information about cigarettes being harmless, and not until 2000, the year 2000, did we actually win any sort of court case, and not until just into the 1900s, I mean, to the 80s, do you remember when the Surgeon General?
1964.
Yeah, in 1964, the Surgeon General put out the warning label about it being linked to lung cancer.
It's amazing.
So what's the, I mean, we'll get back to it after the break, but tell us some of the research that's kind of been skewed, because you talk about that there's research. I mean, I've seen a lot of research on, you know, popular television about, you know, this, about marijuana and how wonderful it is for, you know, a certain kind of seizure disorder and this and that.
There's a lot of research coming out all the time, and what we need to remember is that medicine is determined through the best structure we have. It's not a flawless structure, but it's the best infrastructure we have, which is the FDA. And there's a lot of research and trial periods that go through that a medicine has to go through in order to get out on the market, and that's what protects us from you know a harmful substance that, you know, could be easily tampered with, or I mean, they have to they have to go through these trials that determine efficacy and dosage rates and what it's being treated. And in the marijuana plant itself, there are hundreds of medical components and that have potential, or components that have potential value. So all those need to be tested through the same process that we test all medicines. And there's always research coming up that shows something, but different things. But it has to be in a body of research.
Sure.
So you know, you might hear a study that says we found some sort of link that it helps with some sort of illness, but there's a lot of other information in there that needs to be fleshed out and needs to be determined to know for sure and if this is what we would use this medicine for.
So, Heidi, Brian, the question begs, when people sort of approach you with this idea of, so what? It's just pot. What's so dangerous about this? What do you tell them? What's the research indicate?
Well, there's a lot of good research about the harms of marijuana, and that's what the kicker is that information is not getting out to the public like it should be. We know that marijuana is harmful to the brain, and the harms can be irreversible, up to an 8% IQ drop for regular users over time. People who use marijuana, their risk of becoming schizophrenic raises by 600%.
Wow,
huge.
600.
Yes, school dropout rates are linked with marijuana use and increase as young people use. There's a ton of research coming out now about school performance and lack thereof because of marijuana use. So, you know, my personal experience has been in direct service with young people and doing counseling and helping kids with their drug and alcohol problems. And the clients that were the scariest to me were the marijuana users, because it was a drug that stole their lives very slowly, very consistently, and was really hard to get them to stop using.
Sure.
And even when they went to treatment, coming back was really hard as well. So I've seen marijuana take kids' opportunities, and as they use more and more, their futures are taken from them.
How do the teens react when you talk about these like long-term health risks? Are they receptive to it?
You know, it's interesting. That's, you know, teens are funny.
Teens
they
are
don't
funny.
Really care about, you know, what's going to happen to them in the long term, and they're thinking about just what's right now. And one of the things that we discussed and determined as a team was that, you know, they really don't care about the harms, and maybe that's not the messaging for teens. Maybe the messaging for teens is how they're being played by a big industry, because they are the target market for marijuana products.
They're being duped.
Their brains are primed for addiction, and for any industry that has a addictive product, that's going to be your target. Brian can talk more about that.
Yeah, Brian, how are they targeting youth? I mean, what is this marijuana culture telling these kids?
Big marijuana is telling them that it's okay to use. Big marijuana is telling them that if you just use a little bit, you'll be fine. Big marijuana is not talking about the addictive nature of it. Similarly to how big tobacco 50 years ago, they denied that nicotine was addictive all the way up until about 1990. And there are some research that we've seen that. The other thing I think that we're realizing is that, again, big tobacco targeted the youth. There was a internal memo as far back as 1973 in R.J. Reynolds that's come out, that they said, realistically, if our company is to survive and prosper in the long term, we must get our share of the youth market.
Wow.
But that sentence.
That sentence, I verbatim. Wow. Yep.
Yeah. I remember growing up, like, these characters, Joe Camel and the Marlboro Man. And I remember when they eradicated that side of, like, the marketing for big tobacco. Are they doing the same thing with pot?
They are, and God, weren't those people so cool back then, right?
And
they did a really good job of making us as kids think that Joe Camel was the coolest guy out there. And what you're seeing today, big marijuana is doing that, but how they're doing it is with the products that they have out there. So if you go out to Colorado, you can get soda. You can get a candy bar. You can get ice cream.
I saw gummy bears. That creeps me out.
They have gummy bears.
Because that's when my kids take vitamins.
And the other thing you're seeing because of this is that, and maybe it's a mom or a dad who's buying those products, but the increase in emergency room visits in Colorado for kids has like gone up like four times as much because the kids think, oh, I'll have a gummy bear. It must be fine. And they're eating the wrong gummy bears.
Hmm. But one of the things that was happening in my neighborhood is that everybody was talking about, oh, yeah, that's great. And then all of a sudden there was going to be a dispensary right in the middle of the center of town. And everybody was like, ooh.
Maybe it's not all we thought it
would
be.
But, I mean, just picturing if somebody drops one of their caramels, you know, I mean, a kid picks it up, you know, one of those marijuana-laced caramels. So tell us about the dispensaries. First of all, I want to go on the record as saying if it's a medicine, shouldn't it be going through a pharmacy such as like CVS or Walgreens?
Well, that's, I would agree with you. That's exactly right, and that was what we were trying to get the public to think about. But this was a 6-page law that was written by the marijuana lobby that was paid for by a man in Ohio with his over $1 million. The people that were opposed, our team that I worked on the oppositional campaign, and on that campaign, we had $6,000 to spend to tell the public the truth about this. So, you know, in that law, it talked about there being up to 35 dispensaries in Massachusetts, but that was in the first year. There was no limit on how many that could be brought into Massachusetts. And they had that same law in California that went from, you know, one dispensary in 1996 to over 1,000 in Los Angeles alone.
Wow.
So, you know, they were very strategic about how they wrote that law. And what I think the public didn't understand were the details, the devil's in the details of that law. So now that people understand, I think a lot of voters didn't even know that it was going to be pot dispensaries. It was going to be in a pharmacy.
Sure.
People thought it was going to be in canisters, medical canisters. They didn't know you could sell pots and sodas and ice cream and gelato at these pot shops, which you can. And they didn't know how much. I know that's the other thing. The kicker here is that a person with a medical marijuana card can get up to 10 ounces. They can get up to 10 ounces pot stop.
And an ounce, an ounce of pot is not a small amount. It is the size of like a 1 pound honey jar.
Yes.
That's an ounce.
Well, 10 ounces is about 9 joints a day. And the value of 10 ounces at the time of the campaign was $5,600. So someone could get up to $5,600 worth of marijuana or more or less, depending on the street market value.
Well, the other thing I do know is that pot was never researched upon. I mean, there may be benefits for it that were never kind of pursued because there was so much anti-research about it for a long time also. So I feel like what happened is that enabled people to say, see, there's this one kind of strange, you know, seizure disorder that is benefits from it, and we never got to research it. So, I mean, I know a lot of the well-meaning people felt like, well, maybe there are all sorts of medical things that weren't researched, and it didn't get enough attention.
And that was another piece of the law, is that it can be used for anything. It can be used for back pain, anxiety, depression.
Say, you know, seizure disorders, for instance.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and anybody can get a medical marijuana card with a doctor's recommendation. So it sort of brings out the worst in physicians, in that, you know, there's, even in Maine, there's been a physician that was just busted for, you know, just giving out marijuana recommendations at $300 a pop, you know.
Wow.
All day, that's all he would do. So, you know, the majority of medical marijuana patients get their recommendations from a handful of doctors that are trying to make money off this.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, I'm going to put my fingers up in quotations, but the gateway drug aspect of medical marijuana, which is what we were all taught as kids and isn't true for almost everybody, but it is true for some people.
What? We got a caller on the line.
So we'd like to hear from Marilyn. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. Welcome to Right Turn Radio.
Hello, and thank you for coming. And I hope you don't laugh at me. This is the absolute truth. I'm a senior citizen, and I'm one of the very rare birds, I think, that have never tried marijuana. Well, fast forward about 50 years, and now I end up meeting a new friend. My life had changed, and she's telling me what I'm missing. and something awful happened the first time I tried it. I did try it. I had no enjoyment. I thought I was having a stroke. I took probably 6 drags. I didn't feel anything from the first 2 or 3. I waited. I took 2 or 3 more. And then I became paralyzed. I thought I had had a stroke. My brain was fine. It wasn't like drinking. My mind was clear, but I looked down at my hand. I was thinking, move. It wouldn't move. I couldn't walk. I could speak. I couldn't move any part of my body. I was terrified. The friends I were with said I went white. Now, I said, take me to the hospital. I think I've had a stroke. Well, the new friend of me, said, are you sure? Because this is illegal. Now, that's something people don't think of. If they have a reaction, you're afraid to go to the hospital because something's going to happen. You're going to be in trouble with the law. Well, the more knowledgeable people took me out on the porch. It was a cold winter's day night and made me inhale the cold air. And after about an hour or an hour and a half, I started being able to move again. I felt totally wiped out and weak. It did something to me, and it did something bad. And I cannot find what marijuana actually does to a body, but I think it almost killed me. And I'm telling you the absolute truth.
Wow.
Now, you're the experts. Do you know what the actual reaction was of something like what happened to me? I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Thank you for your call, Marilyn.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn.
We don't know the medical thing, the medical causes of this, but strange things happen to people. And you know, she wasn't having 6 drags of marijuana of, you know, 1968 or 79. She was having
something high-powered.
Much more high-powered.
Heidi, you were saying they market it to, like, treat anxiety. It sounds like Marilyn there had quite the opposite effect.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear your story, Marilyn. That's just terrifying. I mean, people react differently to this drug, and especially when they try it for the first time and when they're trying 21st century pot, some things that don't hit our newspapers here in Massachusetts is what's happening in Colorado. And actually, when they legalized in February, during February spring break, a student there who had never tried marijuana, who was a college student, ate a marijuana cookie, one marijuana cookie, had a psychotic episode, and jumped to his death from a 4-story window. And then, you know, there are multiple stories like that of people just having real psychotic episodes with their first use and doing things that are that end up to be great tragedies. So given your story, Marilyn, I'm sorry that you had that experience, but I'm glad to know that you're still here today because
yeah,
a lot of people
absolutely
might not be.
Yes. So, I mean, I think I think all the scare stories, you know, we grew up with them and we didn't believe them then. And even though they're true, I mean, we work with people who they come in and they say, well, it's just marijuana. Yeah, but they're non-functioning because they have something susceptible so that they are psychotic or, you know, there's some terrible incidences that have happened when people were too high because they have a certain kind of brain chemistry that you can't predict. But the scare stuff isn't what's getting the kids. And I think, I mean, isn't going to, but if you feel like you're being manipulated by big money, I think that's kind of more the direction to go. I mean, I think people need to know. I think parents need to know. And I think people need to know that if you do have a psychotic break or something like that, you should go to the emergency room. They don't care if you're doing something illegal. Just, I mean, that's the one thing I took away from what Marilyn said, that she was scared to go ask for help. She hasn't probably asked her doctor about it. Right. You know, and these are all things that, you know, emergency rooms don't care.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't think anybody would be arrested for having marijuana in their system. Unless they're behind the, you know, wheel of a car operating
right.
a vehicle. But this does speak to the addictive qualities of marijuana. 1 in 9 become addicted to marijuana if they use. And when you're under 18 and you start to use, that risk is 1 in 6. And if you're a regular user, if you use every day as a teenager, that risk goes up to 3 in 6. And so there is an addictive quality. And with big marijuana, we know from tobacco and alcohol that with those industries, 80% of those of the profits for those industries come from 20% of their users.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the 20% that become addictive. And unfortunately, those are the 20% that bring all that we have problems with on the roadways and in our education system and and in our workplace and the healthcare system, and cost us as a society incredible amounts of money, as well as just social cost and despair and destroying families. So it's, you know, we have two industries right now that have created plagues in America, and that's the alcohol industry and the tobacco industry. And the question I have is, why would we add a third industry and a third plague to the American public? Right now, you know, under 10% of the American public uses marijuana. If we commercialize and legalize and let open up a market where they can start to advertise like tobacco and alcohol, and we have 60% of our American public smoking marijuana or using marijuana and eating marijuana, what does that do to our society? And it's a big question that we have to look at. We do not believe in incarceration, but we do believe in prevention, treatment, and education.
Yeah. One of the things I've been really struggling with this whole debate is the whole idea of, if it's legal, you treat it like it's a drug that's legal, like alcohol or cigarettes, I mean, or nicotine. If it's medical, you know, which is what it is in this state, and it's how it started in Colorado and other places. When it's medical, it becomes like this pretend thing, and it comes in under false pretenses. I think they either have, I mean, I think that what's bizarre is they either have to decide it's a medicine or it's a drug. And it, I mean, and if it's a drug, then the FDA would have to be dealing, not the FDA, the tobacco and firearms and marijuana would have to be taking, be the people monitoring it. But if it's a drug, then it would be the FDA. Who's in charge of this now?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Heidi. We see a lot of stuff regarding, you know, legislation for decriminalization or legalization of marijuana happening on the state level. But it seems like the states and the Fed aren't seeing eye to eye on this. Right. What's going on with that?
It's very interesting. I mean, this is how tobacco started as well. Is, you know, states decided and let the states decide. The problem is that, you know, when you have a ballot initiative like we did in Massachusetts, it's really going to be whoever puts the most money in is going to win, because they're the ones who gets the message out, their campaign message.
Lobbyists,
out.
Yeah.
Right. So, and so that's an issue. And the it's still a federally illegal drug, and it remains federally illegal. And this is not inevitable. That's what the lobby wants us to believe, that this is an inevitable thing. And part of the way they've done that is to normalize it. And they've normalized it by passing medical marijuana laws, passing decriminalization laws. And in some ways, as a society, we're starting to succumb to the drug culture. And it's a devastation for families and children, because children will be the target for this. And we know, I mean, if you look at just alcohol itself, there are over 1,000 AA meetings alone in the Metro West area. And when did that become acceptable, where people have to go to a meeting every day just to keep themselves from consuming a product that is being advertised on every street corner?
Mm-hmm. See, I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, people deserve to have some say in their lives and all that. And 10% of the people, or 9 or 7 or 11, are going to have a real trouble with this. And they're not who's voting. The other 90% are like, oh, I smoke a joint every now and then, and I do this every now and then. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens, just like AA, most people, you know, 80% of the people drink really responsibly. 10% are heading to trouble, and 10% are in trouble. And, you know, I mean, it's just... I think that the states haven't figured out a way where this stands. Like, is this a drug or is this a medicine? And I mean, and it's really interesting to watch it go from one place to another.
And when you think about sick people, you don't think about teens, you know, and
right.
It's being marketed towards that demographic. So, primarily, it's amazing.
Right, but this is an issue that should be decided by science. Mm. You know, it should be decided by the research and not by public opinion or what, you know, the next guy says, or through politics. And that's what we all have to pay attention to, is what is the science saying? And the science shows that with this drug, it does detrimental harm to our mental and cognitive states. And we have to keep that in mind. If we look at what happened with tobacco, and that was a drug that took our lungs, you know, and really created a public health crisis that was costly. This drug takes our brains, and what is that going to do to society as a whole, as more and more people use, and that 20%, you know, we're looking at drug driving, we're looking at IQ loss, we're looking at schizophrenia. It's very costly to treat schizophrenias, people with those kind of mental health issues.
Sure.
So dispensaries. They're going to open, and there are other states that have been through this.
What's this going to look like in the Commonwealth here?
I mean, what's it looked like in Colorado, and can we assume it's going to look a little like that here?
I would think, yes, you can assume. Colorado is, the melting pot for where everything is happening right now. And dispensaries are opening up all over the place. There are more dispensaries.
Also known as pot shops.
Pot shops, yes. There are more dispensaries, pot shops in Denver than there are Starbucks and McDonald's now combined.
So, follow the money, eh?
Yeah, but we should let you know that, the approval rate for legalization in Colorado has dropped by 17%. We're now, went from 63% in support of legalization to now, they just did a Suffolk University poll where only 50% of the Coloradans.
Which is a big dip.
And that's just through exposure.
Yeah, and I've talked to people in Colorado, and it's interesting. The dispensaries are nonprofit. There's no tax revenues brought in from dispensaries like here in Massachusetts. That's the way the law was written. And so a lot of people in Colorado were thinking, we see these things, people abusing this system every day, and we're not getting any tax revenue from this. So let's legalize it and tax the crap out of it, which is what happened. So they legalized marijuana, taxed it, and now the black market is thriving because the taxes are so high that people are looking for a cheaper way to get it. So and now it's legal. So there's this diversion of marijuana seeping out the back door, which is what we will see in Massachusetts.
Wow.
So we will see dispensaries here in Massachusetts, and it's been a very difficult thing to put in place. Because in that law, the pot lobby that wrote that law put the Department of Public Health in charge of putting that dispensary structure in place and regulating the dispensaries, which is, they were never in a position. It was a horrible thing to do to DPH. They were never in a position to be successful in that charge of this law. So it's been sort of a big mess, as we all know. And it's going to take a long time before a pot shop does come to Massachusetts. But it's being fought on the streets right now where people are realizing what this law was, realizing what it really means to have a pot dispensary in their neighborhood, and people are saying, I don't want this in my neighborhood. So we're seeing that played out in Brookline right now.
And now they have some evidence from what they've seen in Colorado and some of the other states in the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah, and what I've seen in my field is, Right Turn's been open for 12 years or 10 years or mm-hmm. 12 years. What I've seen is that it went from being something that occasionally people thought, occasionally people were struggling with, but people weren't sure it was okay, to people being sure it's okay.
Absolutely.
It's safe.
And we've also seen an increase of people who are coming in, and that's their primary addiction is marijuana, and they're smoking themselves psychotic in some cases.
Right, and we now have marijuana anonymous meetings. Yep. Not that I can tell anybody about any anonymous meetings, but there are ways of getting help about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, if I have one more parent walk in and say my kid was only smoking pot. I mean, if your kid was smoking pot before school or at lunchtime, people are like, oh, it's only pot. But if they're drinking before school or at lunchtime, that's a big deal. So if parents can kind of envision equating alcohol with this, that, if somebody's having an, occasional drink on the weekend, you're not as worried as if they're drinking a lot all the time. So, I think that people, it's not only pot. It's not only, people no longer say it's only alcohol because they know it's dangerous. So somehow people have to learn how to equate the danger.
Well, the
levels.
Other thing is with marijuana is early exposure to marijuana leads to other addiction later on in life. And that's the science, too, that is coming out now. And, people don't understand the opioid cannabinoid system. And that there's new research coming out now.
Receptors in the brain.
Yes, how they're very closely linked. And if you modify one, the other is automatically modified. So if you're an early user of marijuana, your risk of becoming addicted to opiates at some point in your life becomes much greater. So there's no coincidence that Vermont, which has the highest heroin rates in the country, now has, the highest early use of teen marijuana rates in the country. I mean, we really need to look at that. And that's the thing about this drug is there's not enough research out there to tell us exactly what those causal links are. But we had the same thing happen with tobacco. We didn't know that lung cancer was caused by cigarette smoke, and now we do know that. after a whole host of people have perished, and we've had incredible strain on our healthcare system.
You know, and the wonderful part about that is there's a lot of education about smoking cessation now, but it took like 100 years to get there. That's
yes.
a long time.
And you know how much money goes into tobacco advertisements? So we have to think about this. And Brian's my number guy. We talked about this today. What was the number in 2005 that?
In 2005, they spent $12 billion.
$12 billion on advertising.
So even though advertising doesn't work.
Right. Well, you know, and so the media has their foot in this bed. You know, they're in bed with these folks too, mm-hmm. because that's how they survive. They survive with paid advertisements. So we have to look at that link as well. Because if there's an industry that's about to open up its market and legalize and then pay for paid advertisements that's going to keep my paper going or my magazine going, well, then I'm going to be a little bit pro-marijuana because that's going to be my bread and butter down the road.
Gosh.
So I want to thank, I feel like we could talk about this forever and ever and ever and ever, but I want to thank our guests. They were wonderful. We had Heidi Heilman, who's the founding member of Massachusetts Prevention Alliance, and she's the CEO of Adventi, and Brian Cadigan from Adventi as well. So thank you, guests.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.